two for 1.4.
Okay, so kicking off again, now we're moving on to agenda paper 7 about payments relating to taxes other than income tax. And Carlos, your first... that was a drum roll. At the Interpretations Committee, so the normal rules apply. They have to be nice to you at least for today. So, if you want to tee off?
Yeah. Thank you, Sue. And good afternoon. We'll now move to Agenda Paper 7 on payments relating to taxes other than income tax that are outside the scope of IAS 12. Paragraph 5 outlines the fact pattern described in the request. It is an entity is in dispute with the tax authority but is nonetheless decided to pay the disputed amount. Upon resolution of the dispute, either the tax authority returns the payment to the entity or the payment is used to settle the tax liability. Applying IAS 37, the entity has determined that it does not recognize a liability for the disputed amount. The submitter asks whether the entity recognizes an asset or an expense when it pays the tax authority, and also asks about subsequent measurement if the entity recognizes an asset. We conducted an outreach on this matter, which is summarized in paragraphs 11 and 12. Paragraphs 14 to 28 of the paper present our analysis. And based on that analysis, we think that in the fact pattern described in the request, the entity recognizes an asset when it makes the payment to the tax authority and apply IAS 8 in applying an accounting policy for subsequently measuring the asset. There's one matter that we'd like to draw your attention, to before inviting your views. In reaching our conclusion that the payment gives rise to an asset, we have referred to the conceptual framework definition of an asset, which is also incidentally in IAS 38. The IASB is about to publish a new conceptual framework with a revised definition of an asset. The definition of an asset in IAS 38 will not, however, be updated. So soon, there will be two asset definitions in IFRS literature. And when we finalize the agenda decision, we will need to consider which one to apply to analyze this question. We think we'd come to the same conclusion applying either definition, but the references and analysis would obviously be different. Applying IAS 8 hierarchy, we would apply the IAS 38 definition before the conceptual framework definition if we thought that IAS 38 is dealing with similar or related issues to those under consideration. We think that IAS 38 is not dealing with similar or related issues. The asset in question is a monetary asset, so we have concluded that in analyzing this question, we should refer to the conceptual framework definition rather than IAS 38 definition. Taking this into account, we'd like to draw your attention to question 1 in page 9 and ask if you agree with our analysis and conclusion in this matter.
Thank you very much. And maybe before I hand over to you, what I would propose that we do is we discuss the analysis in the paper as written. And this is based on an analysis of the current conceptual framework definition. As Carlo correctly says, we're planning to publish the revised conceptual framework very soon. And so what I propose we do is that we, for completeness, and I think to make the draft agenda decision more relevant for people when they comment on it, because anybody who's using the conceptual framework to develop accounting policies will need to start referring to the new conceptual framework. When we have our next meeting in May, we'd do a short paper just to, you know, confirm whether or not the analysis would change based on the new definition in the conceptual framework. We don't think it would, but we need to show you that. And then after we've had that discussion, we would put out the draft agenda decision so that it's got the, you know, most up-to-date and relevant information for people to comment on. But for today, let's discuss it on the basis of the analysis in this paper, and then, assuming we land where the staff's hoping we land, we'll just circle back at the next meeting. With that, who would like to make some comments? Bertrand?
I agree with the staff analysis and the staff conclusion that you assess first an asset, and eventually you would consider whether you have to potentially provision part or all of the assets, but it will be a second equation. First, the first debit entry is really an asset, yes.
Thank you. Bruce?
Thanks. I actually agree with the staff analysis. I think it's the right answer. What I did think was quite interesting is when I asked a number of people what they were doing in practice, it certainly wasn't recognising an asset. Quite a number of entities I spoke to were expensing it. So I think the need to do something on this is quite important.
Bob?
I agree with the staff analysis in the proposed agenda decision with potentially one improvement. I thought it might be helpful to indicate in there that once the party pays, puts the money into escrow, it does not have a contractual right to take that money out at any time, because then it might meet the definition of a financial asset, and I don't have to look to the conceptual framework.
All right. Martin?
I agree with the staff analysis. I would even go one step further. I mean, if it is voluntary or involuntary, so to say, so if you get a notice that you have to pay, however you consider that this is based on an error or a completely wrong measurement, and you have very good arguments for that, I believe the question is, is it an asset? And the asset is more or less if the probability of outflow of economic resources is minor, so to say, yeah. So and this doesn't mean cash. It's only focusing on the question when later at the end of the evaluation, so to say, the probability to get that amount back, this advance payment, so to say, and if there is a sufficient probability. So if it is probable that you get it back, then you have an asset. If you consider that this is not be the case or will not be the case, then for sure you have to expense it.
I think that's where the new conceptual framework might shed additional light. I don't think it changes the analysis in this. Yeah. Yeah.
If I could just jump in, because Martin, I think when I picked up this paper and started reading it, I had that kind of approach in mind, but as I read this and just thinking about it, I think that the question about the probability of outflow of economic resources is related to the recognition of the liability for the tax. It's not related to whether or not you have the asset. So I think that introducing the discussion, which is relevant to the package of issues the entity is addressing, might be actually more a point of confusion for readers, because it would indirectly draw in the liability recognition consideration. And I think the staff has rightly focused here on, you know, it's made the point in the analysis of why the item in the staff's view meets the definition of an asset, whether the asset ultimately gets refunded, or if you conclude, you know, if the resolution is that there is a tax obligation and you recognize the liability, it then gets used to settle the liability.
So you either get the benefit through getting the cash back or to settle the liability. So either way, it's a...
So I think that probability of outflow is more a liability recognition issue than the asset question.
I misunderstood the comment, so yes, I'd agree.
But just to pick up on another point you made, Martin, already in the paper we discussed whether the voluntary nature versus if you were required would make a difference in analysis, and we assessed that piece alone would make a difference, which is why I know we're not finalising, sorry, the tentative agenda decision today, but it's why for us we didn't focus on the word voluntary.
Yeah.
In the assessment.
Tony?
I agree with the staff's analysis and with the agenda decision.
Thank you. Bonnie?
Well, I do agree with the discussion and analysis. Maybe just one point that I wanted to highlight is in this specific fact pattern, there's binary results. In other words, you either get the cash back or it's used to settle. There may be jurisdictions where there may be a different outcome. In other words, you may have won the case, but you're not sure if you're ever going to get the cash back.
Is that the recoverability?
And I that maybe goes a little bit to Martin's point, but I think, And I understand where the staff was trying to just address this one specific issue, but I think we need to be clear that we've not addressed that fact, and we've not addressed that potential outcome. And that could be why, Bruce, you've seen diversity in practice. I'll say perhaps we've done something different because you can get some different facts if you have something other than an outcome that's one of the two options.
Okay, so it'd be important to make it clear that those are the two possible outcomes.
We're going to get to the measurement of the asset.
If it's high enough uncertainty, it might get to recognition.
It might affect whether there's a future economic risk.
We did spell that piece out, hopefully. I mean, we can look at for the final. Yeah.
It's
in a very important part of the
Yeah, it is, because if you're not sure you're ever going to get the cash back, even if you are successful, I really struggle with being able to support recognizing an asset. Regardless of in this specific fact pattern, I think it is the correct answer.
But maybe, Bonnie, in this instance, it's what I've said earlier, you would recognize first an asset and then assess whether you have to provision the asset or not.
Well, I think Bonnie's got a scenario where potentially you're not even sure you've got a future economic benefit, so that's a more fundamental question. Mm. But we can address it by being clear with our narrow fact pattern.
Yeah.
Yang Su?
I think I'm the only one who do not really understand the staff paper. When I read the staff paper, what I thought was that staff was examining whether the voluntary payment is an asset or not. But what I'm thinking is, if we take a different approach, like, for example, what if the voluntary payment is a contingent asset? Can we get to the same conclusion as the staff? Received them and sent and received some emails. But, actually the staff explained something on paragraph 20 of the staff paper, that there is no uncertainty about the existence of the asset. That's why this is not a contingent asset. But, what I'm thinking is that there is some kind of uncertainty about the future benefit of the asset in this example. We don't know, actually, how much cash we're going to get in the future. It's just a probability. And that cash depends upon the future event, the court decision.
I think in the facts that we're analysing, the assumption is that you've deposited, say, 100, and you're either going to get that 100 back in the form of cash, or it's going to be used to settle a liability. I think that simplistically. So there's a question about the form of settlement, but I think we're assuming you're going to get the value for your 100.
I think, Yang Su, the question you're raising, the uncertainty about what the decision will be about the tax, is again a question of the liability recognition, because one of the other facts in here is that you have concluded, and it's expressed because it follows the language of the standard in an awkward double negative way, but it's you have concluded that it is not probable that there will be an outflow required as a result of this dispute. In other words, in my language, it's probable that you won't have to pay anything. And that explains nothing to do with the asset, but it explains why you have zero liability recognized. And so I think the uncertainty about the outflow from this dispute relates to the recognition and measurement of the liability rather than to the asset.
Actually, I was half persuaded. To the liability, not to an asset. I need some time to think about that.
Because there is uncertainty with respect to the net of the two, although they're not presented net. Yeah.
Michael?
When we discussed this, I think, I don't disagree with the analysis. I'm a little concerned about unintended consequences, and it is about the whether the payment is voluntary or not. Although I agree it doesn't technically make a difference to the recognition of liability, you'd want to look pretty hard at, is it really not probable that you have a liability where it's been assessed that you are owed this amount and the tax authority is requiring you to pay it? And you wouldn't want people to read it too broadly. So even though we say nonetheless pays, I wonder if we could just be clearer that it is a voluntary payment. these are the circumstances. I just think it might be read a little more broadly than intended.
Tom?
Thank you. I discussed this response with my colleagues from ESMA. ESMA is the submitter of this issue. We agree that the asset need to be recognized in these circumstances as suggested by the staff. However, we believe that the subsequent measurement, which was indicated by others as well, could be further clarified as asked for in the submission. Because, you know, should it be fair value? What about accretion? Questions. You indicated impairment. That kind of questions can be raised if you recognize this asset based on ISA. So hopefully this could be further clarified.
Even though it's essentially a cash amount sitting there to be used either to settle an obligation or to be returned.
Yeah, for example, in the country where I come from, you get interest when you pay in advance. And when do you recognize that interest? Do you recognize it at the end of the day? Yes. So there are a number of questions that can be raised about the measurement of this asset.
If you not do that prepayment, so to say, how would you measure your liability? And is the fact that you do this voluntary payment to the authority, does that impact any difference?
But in fact, the payment you make voluntary is at the beginning not related to the liability, because there is no liability. You believe you are not.
Yeah, because you say the probability.
Probability of the outflow is
50%, and therefore you have no exactly. Liability. And therefore, my point is, if you do a voluntary payment just to avoid any potential interest impact, if nevertheless, because on court or with the authorities, you never know, in certain countries. And you do that payment. Does that fact really then change the overall economic background? This is implied in your question, how to value the asset. Because otherwise, my question to you would be how you measure the liability. And does the fact that you do just a prepayment on a voluntary basis change the measurement of the potential liability?
No. That could be.
Yeah,
but it is not clear.
Okay.
Jim.
I agree with the staff analysis. A couple of us just mentioned all the other issues. When talking about the tax, we always think about liabilities and the probable and the authorities and the jurisdictions. But as Tom just mentioned, it's not in the case. We are given this simplified fact pattern, and it tells don't worry about the liability. That's the case, and I agree. Given this description, that's an asset. However, I do have a minor problem with a sentence written on page 8, paragraph 26, the last sentence. This asset is not clearly captured within the scope of any FRS standard. You know, we're on the principle-based standard. We don't capture any specific asset. It might be true, but I'm a little bit concerned with the way it's saying it. It's not captured within any scope. FRS standard is supposed to cover the whole universe of activities. It's not something should say like this.
I guess sometimes...
Just don't say that. It's too blunt.
Sometimes we don't have a specific scoped-in requirement, so you have to resort to using IS-8 and potentially the conceptual framework. So, yeah.
Any standard is too big.
So I think what your point is, Jim, and what people maybe shouldn't read in this to say, oh, what do you do? There's a big black hole, in the sense that whilst it's not specifically in the scope of a particular standard, that's why IS 8 is there, in a sense.
Yes.
It provides the hierarchy to say, here's some, you know, when you're not directly in a standard, here's a framework to apply and working out what you think is an appropriate accounting policy.
Other than that, I'm fine. Yeah.
Thanks, John.
I agree with the staff analysis. I don't think it makes any difference whether it's voluntary or involuntary. I think there's an asset, not a contingent asset. And I think it would be strange to have the expense recognised based upon the timing of when you make the payment. I mean, the expense actually arises from the recognition of the liability. If you don't meet the criteria for recognising the liability, I don't see that you have an expense, you have an asset. It might be worth, I mean, I think there's a contingent liability because obviously there's some dispute going on around these taxes. So it might be worth drawing attention to the contingent liability requirements of IAS 37, particularly disclosure requirements, because I think in some of these cases, I mean, there is a bit of nervousness about recognising the asset because you know that you're not recognising a liability, but there's lots of uncertainty about the non-recognition of that liability because you're obviously in a dispute with the tax authority. So I think drawing attention to the requirements for disclosure of contingent liability would be worthwhile in the agenda decision.
Reinhardt?
I likewise agree with the staff analysis, and the point I was going to make, I think, is similar to the point John just made. The draft agenda decision now says, applying IAS 37, we don't recognize the liability because it's not probable there'll be an outflow of resources. And the question I had is whether that's the reason the liability is not recognized, or is it because there's no present obligation, or there's uncertainty as to whether you have a present obligation. And what I worry about is, by, you know, the very first sentence talks about the uncertain tax treatments, and we've said in the IFRIC interpretation that detection risk is not part of, should not factor into the consideration of uncertain tax treatments. And so by focusing here in the wording on an outflow of resources, I wonder whether that might potentially contradict that. So I think I thought it was more along the lines that we're not certain whether you have a present obligation. It's a dispute about the issue at hand, like similar to a lawsuit.
So I think if I hear what you're saying, Reinhardt, and by the way, we'll go back and look at that, is that this is just a background part of the facts, by the way, a very important background part of the facts, of course. And at the minute, I suppose that what we had in the tentative agenda decision, sort of based off the wording of the submission, was we sort of put it under the umbrella of what IAS 37, let me backtrack. IAS 37, in defining a contingent liability, says a contingent liability can be one or other of two things. Contingent liability is one where there's a possible obligation that arises from past events where the existence of, you know, you'll only know whether you have an obligation or not based on, you know, something that'll happen in the future, versus, and the second scenario where you can have a contingent liability is where you know you have a present obligation, but you haven't recognised it because it's not probable to be an outflow. So it was based on the submission, we sort of worded this in the camp of saying there is a present obligation, but it's not recognised because it's not probable to be an outflow. And I think what you're saying is just maybe have a look and say, is it a better articulation of those background facts to say it falls into
that? I think Reinhardt's right, actually. Yeah. We've got the wrong kind of contingent liability.
Yeah.
We need to change that.
Okay.
Do we even need to go there? Because the draft agenda decision's about the asset.
Yeah.
So is it not enough to say, applying IAS 37, the entity does not recognise a liability for the disputed amount, full stop?
It could just say it's not recognised.
And then we're not even getting into it.
This discussion made me question how much it's necessary to say at all about the liability, even whether or not it's recognized, as opposed to in connection with a dispute about whether there is a liability. Because I think, you know, one of the things the staff may want to consider is whether there should or should not, right now it said there should not, be any comment that says, that drives home the point that the accounting for the asset, well, it's in effect a deposit, you know, a voluntary payment, is separate from the accounting for the liability, and that the guidance on recognition of liabilities is what will determine
you know, that when you recognize the liability and any associated expense, because it actually doesn't matter whether or not the entity has recognized a liability.
But I think you're right. But I think it might be that the question arises when it hasn't recognized a liability,
right.
Because you seem to have this sort of mismatch.
Right. But I think especially because there's the opportunity of bringing back further analysis in May, the staff can just think about how much it has to.
Yeah, I think we should minimize. I think we should reduce as much as possible the reference to the other side, because I think it's confused.
I think the only thing that's important for me. So I like the suggestion that maybe just says, look, the background facts is it's appropriately applied 37 and not recognized the liability. The only reason for me that's potentially important is that if you had recognized the liability, then you may not be recognizing a separate asset in that. In that any of the, you know, when you credited cash, that actually might, you know what I mean? If you'd recognised the liability, that might be embedded in the measurement of the liability.
I think you're looking.
I'm
anxious.
I'm trying to decide if I agree with what Mary's saying or not. In that. It is a separate analysis, the determination of whether or not you have an asset versus whether or not you have a liability. Because you should be looking at the facts for this particular item, a tax position, and they should be consistent in how you look at the cash payment and where the debit goes and whether or not you have a liability, which I think the liability... If it's not an IS-37, it has to be IS-37, right? So could get a slight difference there with the uncertain tax positions. And I guess that was maybe the point where I was struggling, is if in this very binary situation, I think I can get to you have an asset, notwithstanding kind of possession is 9/10 of the law, and if a taxing jurisdiction has your cash, are you really ever going to get it back? In some jurisdictions, that's probably the case, and others might not be. So, your liability—it feels like it feels like you can't separate the two because it's the same facts. And so, I guess that's maybe where I'm struggling a bit. That if you take, and that's what I was trying to articulate, is if you take the asset in pure isolation, then I think you can get there. But that's my issue. That's why I was looking anxious.
Anxious. So would you be okay, though, if we reduced that sentence to down to applying IS-37? Okay. The entity does not recognise a liability for the disputed amount, full stop, without an explanation of why. Would you agree with that?
Can you really separate the two? I guess that's what I'm struggling with. Or do you have to look at them together in both the recognition and the measurement?
Do we need an explanation of why they would, you think they...
Why they haven't recognized a liability.
So you think you need the explanation?
I think you do.
And maybe then the point is, I think we're saying, we think Reinhardt has a very fair point to say that maybe in giving the explanation, we use the explanation to say...
I was trying to take the easy route, but maybe it doesn't work, so we can have a look at that when we bring it back.
I would guess that would be a question back, is how can you not think about what you do with the liability and determining the recognition and measurement of the asset? And I'm probably... To me, there's a fine line between the recognition and measurement of the asset.
I'm not sure. I only want to mention this to draw it out, because I think what Bonnie's saying is she's potentially questioning whether she agrees with the analysis. So it's not about the articulation of whether you recognise the liability, because our whole point here is we're saying part of the background facts is you've looked at the whole uncertainty piece to work out whether you think you need to recognise a liability, and we assume you've appropriately thought about that, and in this case you've decided not to. Then you've looked at the fact you've credited cash, where does the debit go? And I'm not saying we looked at it entirely separate, but that we're saying in this case, given the facts, given the binary outcome, that means we think that the debit is a debit to asset. and it shouldn't, whether you debit the asset shouldn't be influenced by whether or not you've recognized the liability. And I think maybe you're questioning that.
Maybe I am. Maybe I am. Because it's the same set of facts. It is a tax position, which has two different aspects to it.
Andrew.
I think that... Sorry, I'll start. I agree with the analysis and the staff conclusion, so that's a given. In the agenda decision itself, I think that I might focus initially purely on the asset side and explain what you do with the asset. How you account for it is going to vary by jurisdiction. Sometimes you put money there and it just sits there until it's used. Sometimes you get interest. In fact, in some European jurisdictions, the interest rate is so attractive that people run to put money in deposit. And it happens. So that's going to affect your view of it. However, based on the fact pattern, you have an asset. There's then the question of what you do with the other side. And I think that what we could do is have the agenda decision talking purely about the asset and concluding on that, and then have another part on the end which might start the committee observed that, and then you would record the liability as and when you think you've got an obligation. And I think it is when you've got the obligation, not when it's probable, but it's when you have the obligation. And to Bonnie's point, my feeling is that what you're talking about is a payment in advance to a tax authority in a jurisdiction where you're pretty sure the tax authority is going to tell you you're liable for the tax. And that might advance the point at which you recognise the liability and therefore the expense. And that then gets you to the position economically that you think you're in. It's just that you've got the asset there that you've recorded from the cash payment, and then you have the liability on the other side because you think the money's never coming back.
It's an involuntary required payment, regardless of what we believe the tax position is. And so I think it can matter if it's voluntary or involuntary. If it's voluntary, then I can absolutely see your point of view. If it's involuntary, then regardless of what position papers you have from tax, your tax advisors, your tax lawyers, you may believe you have a perfectly suitable, defendable position, but if there's some sort of requirement from the taxing authorities to give you, to make you pay, you could have no tax, you know, no tax position recorded, or an uncertain tax position that you don't believe you're going, there's going to be a cash out payment. But yet, if it's an involuntary required cash payment, I guess, do you still believe you have an asset? Or do you...
Well, I think for me it might depend on the tax authority, because if I look at it and say this is an aggressive tax authority that just comes and tells me I've got to pay the tax and it doesn't matter what I believe, what kind of backup I've got, they'll just take the money, that's one thing. If it's another one where they want you to put the money on the line so that they know that it's there, but in reality you may get it back, that's slightly different. But it's getting a bit detailed.
Yeah, it is getting a bit detailed.
12 baby fat pattern.
Yeah, and I only want to say that I think the submission asked is hopefully a relatively defined set of facts, and good reasons I think we've spiralled off into extra, but I think if we can stick to the facts, and then the message I get is when we do have the agenda, it's important we spell out exactly the facts because that's very important to the assessment, but let's try to stay.
And I think importantly for me, it sounded like even with our very simplistic fact pattern, it sounded like it would be helpful to people in terms of where they might have been getting otherwise, so I think that gives me confidence. It's a good thing to look at. So what I'm going to do now, you want to come in again?
I do. And it's going back to Jim's comment, it's about a different thing than what we've just been discussing, but thinking also about this morning, is although it's responding to a relatively narrow fact pattern, the last paragraph on page 11 says, also observe that the asset recognized is not clearly captured within the scope of any standard. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty absolute language and kind of across all fact patterns. And there may be some fact patterns in which there's some kind of agreement, you know, signed at the time when you make the payment, et cetera. So it strikes me that there may be a caution about that the asset recognized may not be within the scope of anyone. And that, you know, Jim, to your concern about writing for the world.
That's fair. And Bob had a point about contractual as well, which I think was fair. So I think a few suggestions have been made about drafting. Bonnie's, I think, helpful suggestion about being very clear about how simple the pattern is, I think, is important. We had Reinhardt's observation in terms of the application of 37 and also, I think, thinking a little bit more about how far we go talking about the liability side at all. So we were already planning to come back with a sort of sweep issue, if you like, in terms of what the effect of any of the new conceptual framework asset definition would be. So I suggest that we also bring back what the wording of the tentative agenda decision would be, taking into account the comments we've discussed today and the effect of, if any, of that addition, that new definition of an asset. So with that, all those caveats, can we just have a very sort of tentative show of hands from the committee on the basis of what we're doing today, whether you agree with the recommendation in terms of the direction of travel of not to add this matter to the standard setting agenda.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
Okay, great. And so with that, we'll go away and come back with another paper, hopefully for May, which would be the proposed wording of an agenda decision for the committee to vote.